Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio number 374. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good, Kevin. How about yourself?
I cannot argue, but after watching SmackDown, as we have been doing here now since it's moved to Tuesdays, it does seem like talking smack has become somewhat of an integral part of the SmackDown viewing experience. Like, Raw didn't really bring the Cruiserweight tournament to Raw in any fashion. They kind of hyped that the Cruiserweights were coming, but they didn't show clips from it. Like the WWE has done with Talking Smack already. I mean, there's just been all kinds of storylines generated from it.
Right, yeah. I mean, Talking Smack is it's not a perfect complement to SmackDown. It's become essential viewing. I'm definitely not up on tonight's episode so far, because I do like to watch that just completely, you know, without anything else going on in the background, and just completely focus on it, because that's how good it is. That's how good the promos are. And I'm talking smack, and it was good to see, at least in the final segment, some of that talking smack intensity, you know, come to the main show in front of the big audience.
Yeah, I mean, that was, something that, to me always seems, a little bit different, that the WWE doesn't do. I guess I don't feel like they do it as much as they used to, the talking segment, the end of the show.
No, they actually don't do that talking segment, so, to end the show too often. At least they haven't done it. Probably in the last month or two, definitely. But this was definitely a good segment to close the show on. Dean Ambrose was absolutely on fire. That it was arguably his best work on the microphone, maybe of his entire WWE career. He said what he said. He meant what he said. They definitely have something with this Ambrose Cena dynamic, and I don't know how much, it's constantly changing how much Cena is going to be involved the fall goes on. So I'd hate to see it come to an end Sunday, Ambrose was really hit Cena with some fire, and there's nothing Cena could convert from that. So he was physical violence and was arguing with the whiteboard.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It didn't seem like what Austin had said worked initially, but maybe it has after Ambrose recovered from a couple of weeks ago, where things seemed to go a little bit sideways for him right after. What were you saying?
I don't think it's Austin. I think Cena has awakened something in Dean Ambrose. I don't know if he really, really doesn't like the guy or what, but they've tapped into something that feels real there.
That was pretty, I hadn't thought about Ambrose sticking around as much as he has recently. Because it is a really tough, sport to not get injured in. Like, it's always incredible to me that Jericho has never really suffered a major injury.
Right, no, Jericho has never missed time due to injury. I believe that has been his major calling card, and I'll take Ambrose. There hasn't been at all for any reason, any Ambrose since he debuted. Yeah, he is the guy who 2 years running. I mean, you could look up those statistics. I mean, they are out there.
There are people
who actually cover this stuff for. He has the most matches 2 years in a row.
Yeah, that part I didn't really, I wouldn't have thought about. But when he mentioned the time frame that he's been through, and I'm just like, the first thing that my mind wandered to was his Shield brethren, honestly. And just right off the bat, you're like, well, Seth Rollins had a big absence. Roman Reigns had a couple of different absences. Because I feel like there's one other than the suspension. But I could be wrong on that front.
There was...
Because was there
a hernia.
Hernia.
No, the hernia in late 14, yeah.
Yep, so, I mean, that was the first thing that popped into my head is the both the other S.H.I.E.L.D. guys. I'm like, oh, yeah, they've kind of had some time off here recently. But Ambrose has gone since the S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, nonstop.
Yeah, that's very true. He's been the Iron of WWE, so, I mean, it's definitely impressive, and it's something that he can... Rowan John's face as John Cena has transitioned to being part time. Yeah. So yeah.
Well,
it
just does. They've done a pretty decent job in general with the half real, half work stuff recently. Because I mean, I think that John Cena and AJ Styles kind of have a similar give and take.
Yeah. They do as well. Yeah. Once again, and again, so much of this has been based around Cena and Ambrose. AJ Styles is kind of almost playing the spoiler as the champion, which is an interesting role to take. And I could absolutely picture the finish having to do with AJ, you know, being able, you know,
why did you try to do it?
Slipping in. Slipping in and sliding in and getting the big win.
I would imagine that's what's going to happen, and I completely am on board with that happening, because despite the cheers that that Styles has been getting, I mean, they've still really booked him as a heel. He does heelish stuff. I mean, he really did win the title with a low blow. And and did he do anything shady in the Cena match? I mean, I know that the finish was clean itself, but...
No, not at all. That was a clean win. That was a completely clean win. Right, for
ding dong. I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. It's okay.
The wife is just being ridiculous right now. She is acting put upon. Don't worry, I had dinner. Okie dokie. What was that you were saying that I so rudely did not really listen to? It was something about the Styles. Styles slipping in for the win was where we were at.
Yeah. We were at.
Because I don't.
Styles would have seen those completely clean.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what it was. Okay. Well. He's still kind of... As much as the crowd is split on Cena, I don't feel like the booking is ever inconsistent with him being the babyface.
No, never, never, never.
And, you know, they allowed, and I guess that's why it's been working, is they allowed Styles to do whatever he wanted or say whatever he wanted, but they still kind of booked him as the heel, and it's worked out better. Like, I feel like sometimes they try to force the gray upon someone, and in these situations, it just seems like it's actually fit their characters. In both directions, whether it's Styles to Cena or Cena to Ambrose, or even Ambrose interacting with Styles has worked out, because they both have some reason to have a little bit of a beef with them, with each other.
Everyone has a beef with everyone. There's no alliances going into Sunday. Everyone doesn't like everyone, and that's a good way to go into a match like this. Everything should be good. I'm really hoping that Cena and Ambrose is able to continue. Although I haven't seen anything about, because SmackDown's not going to be on pay per view again until Survivor Series. I've so far seen nothing about Cena being advertised for Survivor Series, but we'll see what goes on with him.
I suppose that will be interesting. And I guess outside of segueing from talking smack to actually SmackDown, which, again, I think they've had a hiccup or two in their programming, but again, this week proved to be the superior programming.
I hated that first hour of SmackDown. I gotta say.
And I was gonna catch myself too, because the other thing that I guess the WWE's done in general has been to feature feuds over a long course now of the show. Or even stretch things out a little bit longer, because, they've done that with Dolph Ziggler and The Miz, which really doesn't need to be gone over again. But to already correct myself on Raw, they did a great job of rebuilding Charlotte and Sasha Banks.
They did a really, really great job building that up. It felt important. They built it up throughout the show. They get to the main event. They got time, but they got a good amount of time. When they did the big title change here, but they're building something bigger, and I mean, it obviously hasn't been officially announced yet, but all speculation is they're getting the cell, and Hell in a Cell. You know, first time ever, two women in the cell for the championship. That is very likely going to happen. And it's Boston, which is Sasha's hometown. It might even be the main event. They might get the main event Hell in a Cell.
That's what it was. I thought I saw, which I thought was a pretty clever term, was a SheLC match.
I did see that. I think Hell in a Cell gives you a little bit more leeway to not, for poor 100-pound Sasha Banks to not kill herself. I mean, you can cage spots, you can do dives. I don't see them climbing the cage or anything. But you can do weapons. You can do a lot of things that you don't normally see in women's matches without going that far.
I agree. Ladders have been busted out, but that is one that I feel like with Hell in a Cell that is even the ladder is kind of limited in that match. Like, I don't know if it's a direct edict thing that they say not to use it, but it's really, if someone in the match commonly used it. I feel like it's popped up, but I also don't think it's one of those things that I'm like, oh yeah, I'm definitely going to see a ladder. Kendo stick, sure. Trash can lids, something. Yeah, I feel like I see those on the regular, but a ladder, not quite as much.
Yeah, no, they might bust it up, but I doubt it. I mean, once again, there's a pretty good chance that they might even get the main event. They'll be in Sasha's hometown. I mean, it's definitely not one of those old situations where the women were fighting over coming from behind the eight ball or anything. This is, they're going to be given every opportunity. They're going to get to have an incredible match at Hell in a Cell.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that it's something that it kind of seems start and stop at first when they started the Divas Revolution. But now that we're a year plus with Sasha and Charlotte and Becky Lynch on the roster, it does really seem like the WWE has put more effort into them in general recently than they ever have. Because the Revolution was something of a joke for a while, but I don't really think it's a joke. Like, they just, and I think it also leads into they need more content. So they realize that kind of diversifying their portfolio will work wonders for themselves. So featuring the women is definitely a way to attract more viewers.
Yeah, this absolutely felt something different, something special. Yeah, even though they had arguably back in July on Raw, the first time Sasha won the championship, there's certainly argument that they had a longer, better match then than they did here, but that was in the middle of the show. This was the main event. Yeah. I mean, which, meant a lot. They referenced the Trish Lita history, which is kind of an interesting part of, it wasn't the first time ever. They're getting back to where things were 12 years ago after, and then things, collapsed after Tristan Lita left, a decade ago. They've absolutely been on the back of Sasha. They've built a strong women's division. I don't know if I necessarily say that as much, especially since now that they've split the women in two, and, the women's championship is essentially been since the summer all about Sasha and Charlotte, with Bayley thrown in, and Dana Brooke for that matter also thrown in. But it's been all about Charlotte. Sasha had a good view. They've had this. It's been a while since they've had a feud where two evenly matched competitors traded a championship back and forth. Like every one of them they've had since the summer has three of them have all resulted in a title change.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny. A lot of times, I guess you'd think about them hot potatoing it, but
I had a little bit of a disagreement with our friend and sometimes stunt credit contributor, Daniel Kuster, about that. Like, this is not hot potatoing with a title. Hot potatoing with a title is when title bounces around to three or four different people in a short period of time. In my opinion, this is a rivalry over the championship with two evenly matched competitors. I think there's a difference there.
How long was Sasha's reign? Only the month?
Yes. Sasha's reign was only a month. I don't remember when the decision was made to take the title off of Charlotte at give the title to Charlotte at SummerSlam. I know that there was concern that Sasha would be out for a longer period of time than she was with a back injury, but obviously she was able to come back much sooner than they expected, and so they were able to pick back up. And it probably wasn't the original. I'm sure it wasn't the original idea, but it's worked out with the two of them being able to trade the championship back and forth, and to build to one final big match.
Yeah, it has. I guess I thought it was weird when Sasha lost it at first. And that was the only other thing, like, you were talking about comparing the, just the length of the match. And that was something I was like, man, that was a really good match, but I feel like they'd had better. But yeah, the time slot that they were in is more important. And, but... Well, and I guess because it has been done before, like, Sasha was basically selling the same story. So, like, to me, it wasn't, I didn't quite get into it as much in some avenues, but it doesn't mean it isn't good to great.
The twisting moonsault, that was pretty spectacular. I'm not sure how often I want to hear busting that out, unless there's at least two women underneath her. Maybe the next time she does it, although I imagine, once again, Hell in a Cell, they're going to pull out every stop in the world, so, you know, hopefully, you know, they'll have a great match, and they both come out okay. I mean, I guess the way Charlotte does her moonsaults to the floor, she does make sure that she lands on her feet, not on her stomach, but, I mean, I guess that, but that impact on your ankles probably doesn't feel the greatest either. But she's a gymnast, so it's not something she's not used to, just maybe a little higher than she's used to.
Right, yeah, you could tell that she took an extra second to make sure her footing was what she wanted it to be on that move.
Yeah.
Because I was just like, oh. And then she went for it. I was like, oh.
I'll say this, not knowing anything about them, knowing very little about the women in Japan and Japanese women's wrestling history, but as far as the American women I've seen, Charlotte is probably the best athlete of them. And I'm not even sure if there's much competition there for, you know, pure athletes.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they've pushed that on the show, and it's hard to disagree with. I mean, Becky Lynch is a very good pro wrestler, but, that's one of those ones where there's still a difference in athleticism. Like,
I like Becky a lot, but not everything she does is smooth. Not everything she does is, you know, that athletic. She does what she can do. She's got great charisma. She's got great, as she calls it, straight fire. She does everything. She does most everything well. But, you know, that spring in her stuff like Charlotte has, no. In that regard, no, there's not much of a comparison.
Yeah, and I mean, it would honestly be hard-pressed to match for just about anyone. Like, there are probably a lot of the guys that aren't as athletic as she is.
Right, no. I mean, even, you know, when she's in the ring with Sasha, you know, I love Sasha. Sasha's great. But Sasha's more the type who throws her body around with reckless abandon. There's not a lot of grace to a lot of the things that Sasha does. But it's still awesome. I worry about her long-term health, but it's again, you know, she does well, but there's just something about the way volleyball, gymnastics, cheer, you know, everything.
And it also helps that I believe she's the largest of the group, too. I'm not sure what her size is at the current moment.
She's the biggest of all the girls except for Nia Jax. Yeah, of course. Not including Nia Jax.
Oh, yeah, because Nia Jax just, she doesn't really count. Because they really haven't, yeah, because did they do anything with her this week?
No, they did nothing with her. Okay. Speaking with Braun Strowman's term to have a squash. So they didn't do anything with her. I mean, I also like, although the women's championship and the title storyline. I like the way that they weave Bayley into it, with first the pep talk with Sasha, and then the confrontation with Charlotte being so mean and condescending, and then Dana, you know, essentially getting herself hurt after Charlotte told her, "Let's go, Dana." That was another moment where Dana screwed up and failed Charlotte, so, you know, girl will be held to pay for that.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, Sasha, only an inch shorter than Becky Lynch. But
really?
They're listing Sasha at 5'5", and Becky at 5'6", and Charlotte at 5'10". At least according to the wiki pages.
I buy those, yeah. Those all seem right.
But I would imagine that more of the women are in that mid five range than closer to 6 foot. Charlotte right, is yeah, just yeah. She's a big woman. And not in a bad way. But anyway,
right.
Sorry. We had moved on to, at least a little bit to the SmackDown things, talking about Becky Lynch. They've at least featured four women, with Carmella and Nikki Bella and Becky Lynch and Alexa Bliss.
They feature those girls well. I mean, I thought there was some clunkiness in the first part when they were trying to get through an Alexa Bliss Nikki Bella match with Carmella getting involved. I thought, you know, when they did the sidestep and then throw her into the girl, you know, doing commentary, I thought that kind of that looked a little botched.
Oh.
But you know, when it settled down into a tag match, I mean, the tag match was all right. You know. Told the story that they needed to tell, you know, when Carmella isn't jumping Nikki Bella from behind, she's running away, that, you know, that Alexa Bliss can beat Becky Lynch, you know, just, you know, it's what they do. I mean, it's not necessarily my favorite thing that champions have to lose every second or third match that they have, you know, in non-title buys, it's how they do business, it's how they set up a new challenger. They're stuck in their ways there,
right.
It's good there. They're gonna have two women's matches on the show, so you know, that should be all right. I mean, obviously, I'm pretty sure Becky and Alexa Bliss will be all right, and obviously, Nikki Bella versus Carmella it's important on two fronts for both of them. That Carmella can hold her own, and that if Nikki Bella, you know, wants to be seen as on the level of, you know, the Charlotte, Sasha, Becky, you know, Bayley, etc., that, you know, she should be able to carry, you know, be a veteran and carry Carmella through a good singles match. So, you know, I'm sure they see it as an opportunity.
I mean, it definitely is for everyone involved, because Carmella really still wasn't the smoothest coming out of NXT.
No. She's still very green.
And really, the Nikki Bella strong style was just starting to get smoothed out, I think, when she ended up with the neck injury.
Yeah, she's back. The only thing she's changed is she doesn't do the rack attack, dropping your opponent on her neck and her spine anymore. That which obviously was a big part of the reason that she had her issues in the first place. She does them with a TKO now, which I'm kind of surprised they have her doing it, because it looks so much like an F5, but I guess I don't think Brock Lesnar cares about such things, so.
Nah, I'm pretty sure he's okay.
It's a good power move for her. I mean, when I was watching, I think it was SummerSlam, one of my buddies commented like that when she did it to Carmella, like, wow, I don't think I could pick up Carmella so easily.
Yeah, I mean, that would not be surprising. Nikki has really put in some time in the gym.
Yeah. I mean, she lives with Cena. He's got, you know, they've shown it on Total Divas. They've shown it on various documentary things. Even in the build-up of the Cena Rock match, he's got his gym in Tampa that's, you know, an old-style sweatbox gym.
Yup. So, good for her. I mean, it's kind of late in the game to be, doing that, but hey, good for her. You know, yeah. I definitely view them as less of a joke in the ring than I did for many a moon.
Right. Yeah.
So, speaking of a woman wrestler on a completely different track, because I feel like we need some time to talk about something that took place over the weekend, and really it was something that took up our entire show last week, to be completely honest with you.
Reports of TNA's demise were apparently greatly exaggerated, because they will always find a way. TNA will outlive us all. TNA will somehow outlive WWE.
If I live to see that day, it will be it'll be something. I don't know what it'll be, but it'll be something. Not that I was surprised, but the Great War started. When you're looking up the Great War on YouTube, you find a whole lot of things about World War II, and not about TNA.
Yeah, you do have to add that. You do have to add that for the Great War TNA or Great War Bound for Glory. Yes, I'm searching for that on YouTube. Yes,
it reminds me of a time that my friend's mother, her granddaughter was playing a part in the Lollipop Guild, and she searched for giant suckers. And she got the unsavory results that is popping into everyone's mind that's listening to this show.
Oh, dear.
Luckily, when you're looking up the Great War, that, it's pretty grim, really, if you think about that stuff. Way more grim than popping up a bunch of women blowing people. Way off track now. Jeremy, I was not surprised that at the beginning of the Great War, Rebby Sky was taken out with a promptness.
Oh no, she's awful. She really. It's not like it was some. I mean, they kind of messed around through a one-on-one match with Rebby and Rosemary Impact last week, but you know, it's only very short, that just led to a bigger angle. But yeah, they got Rebby out of there early, which fine. It's all they needed to do. You know, she would come back to get her revenge later, doing these simplest thing imaginable, something you can loosely describe as a power bomb through a table onto Rosemary. That was a big spot in the match.
That was the one thing. I guess I have not even seen her attempt to wrestle previously to this, and I can honestly just tell by the power bomb how. Like, she just did not look like she felt comfortable even executing that move. Despite the fact that Rosemary basically just needed to fall backwards.
I mean, I know she's done some stuff on the indies, but I mean, it was just a, she's Matt Hardy's wife now and the mother of his son, but you know, when they start together, she was a very attractive model he was dating. I mean, she's not a wrestler, did not.
I was under the wrong impression then. I thought that she had at least had some training, then.
I mean, they train her enough to do some stuff, like, on the indies, but, yeah, nothing that should ever be seen on television. once they got her out of the way, you know, the craziness began. I guess I'm glad TNA lived long enough to see this. It was quite the spectacle. They definitely lived up to everything that this whole Final Deletion Deleter Declay saga has been building up to. So that was I got a huge kick out of it. I mean, it was everything you'd expect it to be and more.
The whole broken Matt Hardy thing has really turned into something else. And all's I could, after watching that, it was just one where I'm just like, ah, son of a bitch. You guys are gonna drag me back in. You guys, like, after seeing that again, I'm like, man.
I mean, and the amazing part is that, TNA's been, you're going to be taping all week, and to get their TV commitments in through almost the end of the year, I believe, maybe all the way through the end of November or some, and then this whole rigmarole starts all over again with trying to fund new tapings. But what they've already taped and what I've seen, they do nothing with the Hardys and Decay in the studio. So whatever they're doing with them for the next couple of weeks of TV, once again, will be stuff that they film wherever. It will be more of that guerrilla television type of deal. And that's, you know what? Them appearing in front of the live audience should be a special thing, and they should continue to do it like that with all their videos.
And that was a funny thing that someone pointed out, that most times people get mad at the outside of the ring, outside of the arena spot a lot of times because, well, they're just basically watching it on a giant TV then.
But not this.
But yeah, not this, and I think because all of it has been that crazy, if you're not on board,
that's what you've come to expect.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you're not on board, you're not on board. You're not watching this. If you're into this, you've got to see this coming. And the fact that they were fighting on the back of a pickup truck, like, I didn't know who the redneck guy was. Jeremy had to fill me in on that.
Yeah. The guy who his truck, the case, stole, followed them all the way to Orlando from North Carolina. that was a nice touch. I'm sure it was lost on plenty more people. But once again, Matt Hardy's, I think, a pretty meta thinker, so he wants everything to come back together at the end. I guess if you know anything about Universal Studios, you know that when you step out of the Impact Zone area, the area that Matt and Abyss were fighting in is actually 2 miles away, and they were there within 5 seconds.
Oh, yeah, I am not that familiar with Universal grounds, so I was not aware of this.
Yeah, I'm not either, but yeah, that was definitely pointed out.
Oh, but again, like, if you're not expecting this, just go fuck yourself.
Right. I believe they've done teleportation in this angle since Matt Hardy has developed the seven deities have made him magic.
Oh, man. Yeah, and the seven deities even allow Jeff Hardy to have several wardrobe changes along with some...
The one reference I still don't even get what he was going there with the jive-talking guy. I know what Willow is. I mean, well, he's done it on TNA. It's a pretty well-known deal that was his kind of silly indie gimmick when they were first starting out. But yeah, the costume changes, those were good. It's like everything about it. I wouldn't know where to begin to put it, rate it on the star system or anything like that. Huh. But as a spectacle, it was big time fun.
Yeah. And like I said, I did say, I'm like, son of a bitch. I can't believe you're going to drag me back in. But even if I just watch those segments on Impact Wrestling, I think I'll be happy. Like, I don't think I can tolerate any of the other nonsense that's going on.
Right. No. The other things I kind of picked up from Bound for Glory, the Gail Kim Hall of Fame ceremony was very well done. I mean, everyone has a huge amount of respect for her, and her husband, Chef Robert Irvine, are madly in love with each other, still, madly in love with each other. He was in the front row taking pictures, crackling in tears, so at least it meant something to them. I mean, Gail Kim is somebody who probably should have had a better run in WWE and should be more well-known than she is, but yeah, that...
Yeah,
I mean, unfortunately, her inability to really make it past a certain point in WWE, it's been kind of explained that, simply put, Vince McMahon just doesn't get Asian chicks. And it was that era, so, she would thrive now. Maybe she's a little older than what they're looking for now, because she's been in business 16 years, but... Yeah, if there was the focus on, athletic women's wrestling now, and she was, maybe a little younger, she'd be killing it now, but, she's had a good run in TNA, and so that was really nice.
Yeah, that is kind of funny. Like you said, like, everything kind of died off after Trish and Lita, and she came in, like, right after them.
Actually, I think she was around, kind of during that period, but it was still the cheesecake era. And once again, as I said, Vince McMahon just did not get age women. it's as simple as that.
and it really doesn't help. Like, I agree that she is certainly worthy of induction at some juncture. Really, like, she probably won't get into the WWE Hall of Fame, but. It really should be, because she had a great run there the first time around in TNA. This run, it's just they don't have anyone there for her.
Right? No. I mean, I did watch her match with Maria. Maria, she's tried to be a wrestler she's been mostly a valet, but back in that era where every pretty model girl that they brought in, they had to train them to wrestle and throw them out on TV, no matter what their skill level was. I mean, she's tried, but no, the match, there wasn't, Gail Kim did not have much to work with there.
Right.
I mean, and... I guess the finish was satisfying, because the whole story was built up that Maria was walking around with a championship she didn't deserve, she wasn't really a wrestler, and when Gail finally got a hold of her, she was going to kill her, and that's basically what happened. So, in that regard, satisfying, but, not a good match or anything, or a good representation of what Gail can do.
Yeah, I'm not... I didn't see anything else from Bound for Glory outside of the Hardy match. I did read about it, and it... like you said, like, it fits the tenor of the night. They don't seem as spiteful as Vince McMahon to pull the rug out from under somebody right at that moment.
Right, no.
You know, I'm good with the ending. Because who was it? Oh, Taryn Terrell was starting to turn into something. Like, she's another one of the people that I feel like the few people that left WWE that improved afterwards.
Yeah. And she was, she left, wrestling, to start a family. I mean, she was there to, say some nice words about Gail Kim. She's, pregnant, I believe, with her second child. And, she's just nice,
Yeah.
Every, amount of, good I became is because of Gail Kim.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, Kim is certainly deserving of, more than she's getting at the current moment. Because being in the It is kind of funny that TNA is inducting the right people into their Hall of Fame, but it's just that they're such a joke, like, it doesn't mean anything.
Right. It really doesn't. And there have been years they've turned the Hall of Fame into more of an angle. I believe that they did it with Kurt Angle two or three years back. So maybe their record on that isn't the most stellar, but... they did right by Gail Kim.
Yeah, and I don't know. Is there anything else from that pay-per-view that is really worth running through? Because, I just realized that... Well, I mean, I guess there is the Get Back the Angle. I mean, you kind of talked about it, that they have programming essentially what seems like through the end of the year.
I mean, Dixie was able to get funding. No one knows exactly where it came from. She held a talent meeting. It was said that, there's, rumors that, or things that got out from that meeting that she did say that there was a power struggle, but she's noted that she won, so... I'm not sure exactly what that means for Billy Corgan, although Billy Corgan did appear at the tapings. He and Aero Lux have put in quite an amount of money, and it would be interesting to see if, after all of this, Dixie never actually does sell. Although she's got to get money from somewhere to continue taping, but she keeps finding sources of money. You got to hand it to her.
She is a resourceful woman, it would seem. Until the story comes out, I guess you can never really know for sure. But, that is a pretty big one. And it's a big one to pull out, and I guess that's the other reason why I'm kind of annoyed by being drugged back in by the Hardy nonsense, or fun sense, maybe. Like, nonsense probably isn't quite right, although it is nonsense, too. But, still, under her direction, I just don't have any faith in their programming whatsoever.
Everything else outside the... Most everything outside the Hardys is pretty still pretty bad. I mean, overall, other than the Great War, that pay-per-view didn't really have much else. I mean, when Ring of Honor's on pay-per-view putting on great shows, when New Japan is, it's not doing killer numbers in the U.S., but it's still out there, it's still readily available, doing great shows. Most WWE pay-per-views are good, are at least good to great. So to decent doesn't cut it, or one good match doesn't cut it. TNA they've got bigger issues. When all of the available free agents were being picked out, TNA was caught sleeping at the wheel, and they didn't get Ring of Honor got more better guys, Lucha Underground got more better guys. Obviously WWE was going to get whoever they wanted. Yeah, and the guys TNA ended up with. are kind of the worst of the bunch.
Yeah, it is pretty funny. Like, as forgettable as ROH has been, I don't feel like they're missing Mike Bennett and Maria Kanellis, who didn't add a whole lot to the programming, in my opinion. Moose is one that... Go ahead.
I was going to say, if you look up the word average in the dictionary, there's a picture of Mike Bennett.
Yeah. yes, yeah. Yes, there is.
And you were about to say Moose. Yeah, Moose was certainly a project to work on, but I'm not sure if he's the type of project that works for her to have. Obviously, I hope he signed a 1-year deal with TNA so that he can be free to go to WWE by next year. Moose is definitely a guy who belongs in the WWE system more than probably anyone else.
Yeah. He could use the structure to help. Because he's another one. We were talking about Charlotte's athleticism. It just stands out for him. Like, there are some guys that have also made it in the NFL while they get a good response, and I guess I'm thinking Mojo Rawley at the current moment.
God, I just turned off my TV tonight when Mojo Rawley came on. I mean, because I was recording something else on another channel, so it's like I couldn't change channels. So I literally just turned off my TV and sat in the dark for about 5 minutes when Mojo Rawley came out.
Well, I do definitely not have your disdain for him. I guess now that they're not piping in sound to SmackDown, I believe the response a little bit more on SmackDown itself. It was hard to take anything serious on that show when it was recorded.
Right, yeah.
Because you could hear cheers and you could see the crowd just sitting on its hands. He has something, at least with the crowd. But athletically, like, he doesn't impress me like Moose does. Similar to what we were talking about, and this is going to be an insult to Becky Lynch, but, he's kind of like Becky Lynch in that equation, like, between the Charlotte and Becky Lynch dynamic, if we're going to kind of continue that theme. And what's his name? Oh, Baron Corbin played professional football too. Like, and he's another guy that doesn't particularly strike me as athletic as Moose is.
Yeah, Moose. Yeah, Moose has a lot of physical gifts. In an era where, if TNA still had Spike TV and they were still doing a million viewers, they might be able to push Moose versus Bobby Lashley, build Moose versus Bobby Lashley into something. But they don't. And they just, there's nothing they, there's no real, how am I trying to say this? There's no real big moment for Moose in TNA. If TNA sticks around and he stays with them for years, those will be wasted years for the guy.
it's
not like WWE didn't want him or anything. I mean, they wanted him, but there was something in his past. There was an incident with an ex-wife or an ex-girlfriend that WWE didn't really want to touch at that moment. So, I mean, there was definitely interest there. So,
right.
I think if they feel more comfortable signing him, they absolutely will.
Well, yeah, there would be no reason not to sign him, honestly. Because again, just his physical gifts would seem to be worth some hassle. Because to me, he's not one of those guys that you just throw out there right on Raw or SmackDown right away. Like, if there's a guy that needs to wrestle some matches in NXT, he would fall under that category.
Yeah. He'd absolutely need a good, you know, strong, you know, year in NXT. So, but yeah, once again, though, you know, we're talking about the TNA roster is actually very thin. I mean, there's people, you know, there are indies out there putting on better shows than TNA is able to put up. Their eye for talent has definitely been lacking. And I'm not just talking about not being able to have the high-priced guys they used to have or anything like that, but their eye for indie talent, they can get away with paying a few hundred dollars. it just doesn't seem to be there.
Yeah, because they've picked the most generic-looking people. Like, even as well as they've done, I feel like, pushing Eli Drake.
Oh yeah, I don't get him at all. I mean, I guess everything he says sounds right, but I just don't feel it. I just don't buy into him in the ring. He's certainly nothing special either.
Yeah. And that's kind of, I think he's kind of symptomatic of the problem. Like, he kind of looks the part, but there isn't anything distinguishing him at all in any way. You know, he doesn't really have a look at all. And what's his name? I think it's Trevor Lee.
Trevor Lee is an interesting one in that in other promotions, he's a Carolina indie guy. He does a lot in PWG. People say, you know, he's good in those companies, but he loses something when he's in TNA.
But, I mean, it's another one of those things that he just kind of has a plain look to him.
Yeah.
You know, he just has long hair, a beard, and a pair of trunks. Like, you don't need to go all Dalton Castle on for every character, but you need to have some type of defining look. Whether it's a jacket or, you know, something like, I mean, even with like Triple H, you have the King of Kings thing. Cause even when he wasn't wearing the ridiculous capes, he was wearing something to kind of remind you of, the different kind of characters that he was.
Right. Yeah.
And there's just nothing with those guys. And there's just a lot of them where, again, they kind of fit the part, but there's something that still just isn't completely working for them.
Right, yeah, no. No, I mean, yeah, I mean, the show outside of the Hardys, we've said it before, there isn't much to it. I'm certainly wondering about Lashley's future. I mean, he was quoted in an interview with, I believe, with Sports Illustrated saying that I think Brown for Glory is going to happen, and then adding, I don't really care. And he has been in various places also talking about a potential match with Brock Lesnar, so, you know, maybe he's got, you know, one eye and one foot out the door.
Yeah, and I mean, you can't really blame him at all.
No, not at all.
And I mean, again, just if you look at the evidence, there's so much of a ceiling for TNA at this point. Like,
right, yeah.
Even if they do keep existing, it doesn't mean that they're going anywhere. You know, they still need something to change to go somewhere. And that's the other thing. Like, okay, you got the tapings. Great. You're going to do the same stuff again.
Right. Yeah. 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 I don't foresee any change in philosophy, especially as long as Dixie has majority control. I mean, it's going to be the way it's been done for the last, at least since they've been off of Spike. And even, you know, before they left Spike, the shows became, you know, the shows fell into the current formula, you know, because around the time that they were on their way out on borrowed time on Spike was when they decided to stop running pay-per-views, stop running monthly pay-per-views, stop running, you know, even quarterly pay-per-views, so the shows weren't building up to anything. I mean, they've only recently started to build back, you know, two pay-per-views, you know, a year, essentially, Slammiversary and Bound for Glory, which they actually did a pretty decent job with Bound for Glory. Still wasn't anything I was going to pay to see, but...
Right. Yeah, because... And that's the way we can end things with our trading of sarcasm that... you noticed, I would imagine, and I did not.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, despite all the great war build-up and all that we've honestly talked about, and, you know, even though I haven't really watched it at all, you know, it didn't really... I don't know what the numbers are, but I'm going to guess it didn't get enough buys.
I'm pretty sure of that. I'm pretty sure that TNA at this point, I mean, when they run pay-per-views, they're doing under ROH numbers.
So, you know, it's just another thing to look for that while, you know, we kind of enjoyed what we wanted to enjoy, there's a whole lot of fuck it involved in TNA still these days.
That's a good way to put it. It's the Hardy's playground, and little more than that.
Yeah. So, I will end things by talking about a picture that I will hopefully tweet out here. I think the stunt granny German suplex Hefeweizen is a little too dark. So to modify a catchphrase from one Seth Rollins, I'm going to redesign, rebrew, rebottle. It will come back better than ever, just like coming off a knee injury. So with that one, I can say at DeFrango11, the other end here is at Chris Calamita. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Everybody, have a good night.